All right. Want to dive into a case from 1923.
Sounds good to me.
It's Adkins v. Children's Hospital. You might think, oh, that's got to be pretty relevant now, right?
Yeah.
But it's really interesting because it gets at this tension between freedom of contract and the power of the government to regulate working conditions. And what makes it even more interesting is that it was actually overturned in 1937.
Oh, wow.
During the New Deal. So that tells you right there how much things can change.
Yeah, how much the thinking about these issues can evolve over time, definitely.
Exactly.
What strikes me about Adkins is how it exemplifies a particular moment in American history. It really shows this era when the Supreme Court was very skeptical of the government getting involved in the economy and often struck down laws designed to protect workers, like a real reluctance to interfere with market forces.
So what was at stake in Adkins? What was the big question?
Well, it boils down to this. Can the government tell businesses how much they have to pay their employees? Specifically, this case was about a minimum wage law for women in Washington, D.C.
Just for women?
Yeah.
Why was that?
Well, this was a time when the idea of protecting women was often used, how do I put this? It was used to justify a whole range of laws, you know, like limiting their work hours.
Mm-hmm.
The thinking was that women needed the special protection because they were seen as weaker, somehow more vulnerable than men. Of course, we view things very differently today.
Right. Very much so. It all seems pretty outdated now.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so we've got this minimum wage law, and then we have Children's Hospital. You'd think, you know, a hospital would be all about caring for people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they actually fought against this law, arguing against paying their female workers a minimum wage.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic, isn't it? Children's Hospital, along with a hotel worker named Willie Lyons, claimed the law violated their Fifth Amendment right to freedom of contract. They were basically saying the government shouldn't interfere with their ability to negotiate wages with their employees, kind of like a hands-off-our-agreements kind of stance.
So they're drawing a line in the sand there. So what did the Supreme Court think about all of this? Did they agree with the hospital? Or did they support the idea of a minimum wage for women?
So get this. The Supreme Court actually sided with the hospital.
Really?
In a 5-3 vote. They declared the minimum wage law for women unconstitutional. It was almost like they were saying, look, the government can't tell you how much to charge for a gallon of milk, so why should they be able to set a minimum price for labor?
Wow. 5-3. That's a pretty decisive win for the freedom of contract argument. So how did the court justify this? What was their reasoning?
Justice George Sutherland, he wrote the majority opinion, and he really emphasized this idea of freedom of contract as a fundamental right. Employers and employees, he argued, should be free to bargain and make agreements without the government stepping in and dictating the terms.
So any attempt by the government to set a minimum wage was seen as a violation of that freedom, almost like an intrusion on the free market, like you were saying. But hold on. Didn't the court rule differently in Mueller v. Oregon? That was the case where they upheld limits on women's working hours, right?
Yeah.
How did they square that with this whole freedom of contract thing?
Yeah, that's a good point. You're right. Mueller seems to contradict this. Sutherland actually addressed Mueller in his opinion. He claimed that it was based on, well, outdated ideas about women's physical capabilities and that it was no longer relevant.
Huh.
He pointed to the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, as proof that women were now equal to men and didn't need this special protection.
So he uses the 19th Amendment, a huge victory for women's rights, to argue against a law that was designed to protect women in the workplace. That's kind of a twist. Seems like they were picking and choosing which parts of the Constitution to focus on to support their decision. Were there any dissenting voices on the court? Anyone who disagreed with this?
Absolutely. Two justices, Chief Justice Taft and Justice Holmes, they wrote some really strong dissents.
That's where it gets interesting. Dissenting opinions. Tell me, what were their objections?
Well, Taft really zeroed in on the majority's attempt to distinguish between regulating work hours and regulating wages. He was essentially saying, wait a minute, if we can regulate how many hours women work to protect their health, why can't we regulate their wages for the same reason? He even said that low wages could be just as harmful to a woman's well-being as working too many hours.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, if you can't earn enough to live on, that's going to have an impact on your health.
Right.
So he saw this clear link between fair wages and public health. Something the government, in his view, had a legitimate right to be involved in. What about Holmes? He was known for his, sharp legal mind and a unique way of looking at things.
Holmes took kind of a big picture approach. He challenged this whole idea that freedom of contract was this absolute unbreakable right. He wrote this really famous line, the liberty of contract is interfered with by school laws, usury laws, and every other statute. Basically, he was saying that the law is full of limits on freedom of contract. It's not this sacred principle that can never be touched.
So freedom of contract, yeah, but within reason. He saw the hypocrisy, I guess, of claiming that it was this untouchable right when we already have laws that restrict it in other areas.
Right.
And Holmes seemed to understand that individual rights sometimes have to be balanced against what's good for society as a whole.
Exactly. He was arguing that if a law has reasonable support, you know, if it's trying to address a real problem, then the courts shouldn't interfere with what the legislature has decided. He believed in giving lawmakers the space to try to solve difficult issues.
So you've got the majority clinging to this strict interpretation of freedom of contract, and then you have Taft and Holmes advocating for a more realistic view, I guess you could say, one that takes into account how things actually work in the real world. So what happened next? Did Adkins just sort of disappear, or did it have a lasting impact?
Oh, it definitely didn't fade away. Adkins had a huge impact. It actually led to minimum wage laws being struck down all over the country.
Wow. So one case from 1923 wiped out minimum wage laws nationwide. That's incredible. But you said earlier that Adkins was overturned eventually. How did that happen?
Well, it had a good run, but Adkins was eventually overturned in 1937 during the Great Depression.
The New Deal era, a period of massive change, both socially and economically, and the government was suddenly much more involved in regulating the economy. I'm guessing the court's views on freedom of contract had evolved a bit by then.
Absolutely. By the 1930s, the court was much more open to the idea of the government playing a role in the economy. They recognized that the government had a legitimate interest in protecting workers and ensuring everyone had at least a basic standard of living.
So Adkins had its moment, but the times were changing, and maybe those powerful dissenting opinions from Taft and Holmes helped nudge things along.
Yeah, maybe so.
It's fascinating how one case can have such a huge impact. First striking down minimum wage laws, and then indirectly paving the way for their return. But there's still a lot to unpack here.
Yeah.
We need to dig deeper into those fiery dissents and really examine what Adkins means for American law in the long run.
Yeah, definitely.
So stick with us. We'll be right back after a quick break. You know those dissents in Adkins? They really cut to the chase. Taft arguing for consistency, like, hey, if you can regulate hours, you can regulate wages. And Holmes going after this whole freedom of contract as some sacred cow. It's like Holmes could see the future, the arguments that would lead to Adkins getting tossed out. Let's unpack Taft's dissent a bit. You said he really wasn't buying the difference the majority saw between regulating work hours and regulating wages.
Exactly. He just didn't see it. Taft was basically like, look, the whole point of Mueller v. Oregon, that was to protect women's health, right? So how can you say that setting a minimum wage isn't about health too? He connected work conditions, fair pay, and a person's well-being. He even used that phrase, sweating wage, really hit home back then.
Sweating wage, yeah. Paints a pretty stark picture. Working so hard for so little, you're barely getting by. So Taft's saying a living wage, it wasn't just about fairness. It was about public health, public safety, something the government had a duty to get involved in.
Absolutely. And he takes it a step further. He criticizes the majority for kind of stepping out of line. He accuses them of basically substituting their own economic views for what Congress, the people's representatives, decided.
So Taft was worried about the court acting like some super legislature, striking down laws they just didn't personally agree with. That's a debate that never goes away, right?
Definitely not.
Okay, let's turn to Holmes's dissent now. You called it a masterclass in legal thinking. Give us the highlights.
Holmes really tore apart this idea of freedom of contract as some kind of untouchable thing. Think about it, he said. The law is full of limits on freedom of contract. Usury laws, so lenders can't charge insane interest, child labor laws.
He's basically saying, look, limits on freedom of contract, they're everywhere. It's not this holy grail the majority was making it out to be. You mentioned he had a great line about this.
Oh, yeah, he wrote, the liberty of contract is interfered with by school laws, usury laws, and every other statute. Every law puts limits on individual freedom. That's the point, right? The question is, where do we draw the line?
And where did Holmes think that line should be when it came to minimum wage laws?
He felt that if a law was passed democratically, and it has a reason, a good basis for existing, then courts, they should back off and let the lawmakers do their thing. He respected the legislative process. Lawmakers, they're the ones who are supposed to understand these complex problems, and the courts shouldn't second-guess them.
Okay, so we've got the majority with this rigid idea of freedom of contract, and then Taft and Holmes, they're looking at it more practically, more realistically. It's interesting, though, both Taft and Holmes, they come at it from different angles, but they both land in the same place. The minimum wage law, it should have stood. And they're thinking it feels pretty relevant even now.
I think so, yeah. It shows how important it is to really think through the legal arguments, to look at different sides of an issue. And of course, their arguments, they win out in the end when Adkins gets reversed.
Right. But to see how that happens, we need to pull back a little, look at the bigger picture, the historical context. You mentioned that Adkins was decided during what's called the Lochner era, when the court was known for striking down economic regulations. Can you give us a little background on that?
Sure. The Lochner era, it runs from the late 1800s to the mid-1930s. And during this time, the court was really into laissez-faire economics. The idea that the government should just stay out of the free market, they saw freedom of contract as like this core part of individual liberty protected by the 14th Amendment.
So even if those contracts resulted in unequal power or bad working conditions, people should just be free to make whatever deals they want. That seems like a pretty narrow view of freedom, one that puts business interests above workers.
Yeah, that's a common criticism of that era. Critics say that the court's laser focus on freedom of contract, it blinded them to the reality of unregulated capitalism. Poverty, unsafe workplaces, and workers, especially those who are vulnerable, getting taken advantage of.
It's a reminder that the law, it doesn't exist in a bubble. It's always shaped by what's going on in society, the economy, politics. And the Lochner era, it reflects this ideology that really emphasized property rights and economic freedom, sometimes at the expense of social justice and worker protections. But you said that the court's view of the Constitution can change. What caused this shift away from the Lochner era?
The Great Depression, that was a major turning point. So much suffering, so much unrest. It forced the court to reconsider how they were approaching economic regulation, laissez-faire. It just didn't seem to fit anymore, not with what was going on in the world.
The real-world consequences of this hands-off approach, they became impossible to ignore. The scale of the suffering, the inequality, it demanded something different.
Yeah.
So how did the court change course?
The New Deal. It really marked a big shift. This was President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and the New Deal brought this unprecedented level of government involvement in the economy. Think Social Security, programs to help the unemployed, get the economy moving again, and reform the financial system. And of course, all this government action, it led to some legal challenges.
So all these New Deal programs trying to help people and fix things, they clashed with this old idea of economic liberty the court was so attached to. Sounds like a big showdown was brewing.
Yeah, for sure. Many New Deal programs had regulations that would have been shot down during the Lochner era, you know, because of that freedom of contract idea. And at first, the Supreme Court, they did push back, struck down a few key parts of New Deal legislation. And this fight between the court and Roosevelt, it led to that whole court packing plan controversy.
Oh, yes, that was a bold move. Remind us what that was all about.
Basically, FDR, he wanted to appoint more justices to the Supreme Court, enough to change the balance of power and get more support for the New Deal.
So it was a way to make sure his programs wouldn't get blocked by the court. Did it work?
It was pretty controversial and didn't pass Congress. But it definitely seems to have sent the court a message.
A message? What kind of message?
Well, right after that, the Supreme Court started upholding New Deal legislation. Like, they realized things were changing and being stuck in that Lochner mindset wasn't going to work anymore.
Sounds like they were paying attention to what was happening in the country. The pressure from the public and from Roosevelt, it had an impact. So the stage was set for Adkins to be overturned.
Exactly. Everything has shifted. The court was more willing to let lawmakers make the calls, especially when it came to the economy. This is what led to West Coast Hotel Co. v. Parrish in 1937.
And that brings us full circle, from freedom of contract being king to the New Deal expanding government power, setting the scene for Adkins to be overturned. So tell us about West Coast Hotel. What was the issue there?
West Coast Hotel, it's a huge case, not just for labor law, but for the Constitution in general. It marks the end of the Lochner era and starts this new era where courts defer to legislatures, especially about economic stuff. It was about a minimum wage law in Washington state. Elsie Parrish, she worked at a hotel and sued because she wasn't getting the minimum wage.
Sounds familiar. Another minimum wage case for women, just like Adkins.
Yeah.
So did the court change their tune?
Yep, this time they did. In a 5-4 decision, the court upheld the Washington law, said it didn't violate the 14th Amendment. Basically, they said Adkins was wrong.
Another close one. That issue really divided them. So what were the main points in West Coast Hotel?
The majority opinion, written by Chief Justice Hughes, it had a much broader view of what the government could do compared to Adkins. He said the state had a right to protect its citizens' health and welfare, and a minimum wage, that was a reasonable way to do that.
Like we saw in Taft's dissent. Right. Protecting workers equals protecting public health. What did the dissenting judges say?
The four who disagreed, they said the court was ignoring precedent and overstepping its boundaries. They still believed the Constitution didn't let the government set wages, and it messed with freedom of contract.
The ghost of Adkins still lingering. But the majority ruled, and Adkins was done. What impact did West Coast Hotel have on law and society?
It was a total game changer. The Supreme Court's whole approach to the economy changed. They gave more power to the lawmakers. This led to tons of New Deal programs and regulations to make workplaces better, create safety nets, and help the economy recover.
So it wasn't just about minimum wage. It was about expanding what the government was allowed to do to fix problems.
Exactly. And it rippled through society. Labor unions grew. Social Security was born. All these programs we depend on now.
Amazing how one case can have such a huge effect. Shows how law isn't just some theory. It changes lives. Sometimes a new way of thinking about the law can transform a whole society.
West Coast Hotel also proves that the Constitution is alive. It changes as society and values change. What used to be interfering with freedom of contract became a legitimate way for the government to protect people.
Makes you think about Taft and Holmes, those dissenting voices in Adkins. They sounded radical at the time, but they started this change in thinking. They saw that freedom of contract had limits and argued for a more balanced approach that helped workers and society.
And in the end, they were right. The court caught up with their way of thinking, realized that too much economic freedom could hurt people. It shows how important dissents are. They can shape the future of law.
Well, we've been on quite a journey today. The rise and fall of Adkins, the huge impact of West Coast Hotel, and this constant back and forth about economic liberty and the government's role in protecting workers.
It's been fascinating to see how American constitutional law has evolved. These cases remind us that legal ideas aren't static. They're always changing because of society, the economy, politics. Understanding the history helps us understand the legal problems we face today.
Absolutely. So next time someone starts talking about freedom of contract or the government messing with the economy, remember Adkins and West Coast Hotel. They teach us how constitutional law changes and why it's so important to find a balance between individual rights and the common good.
And as you explore the law, remember that those dissenting opinions can be a sign of things to come. Sometimes what seems crazy in one era becomes the norm in another.
Great advice. Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Adkins v. Children's Hospital. We hope you enjoyed this trip through legal history. Join us next time for another look at a landmark case. Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.